Thank you. Gosh. Now, do you see why we wanted Bob to speak today? Now, if you would look under the dictionary, under the effect, there'd be a picture of Bob's face. This is what we're talking about. And he didn't even tell you much of his story. I got the privilege of hearing his whole story at an AA meeting that I attended with him. And it's an amazing story. To hear where he came from and then to hear him today, you know, it doesn't connect. It's like two completely different people. That's living the effect of God's love. That's what we're talking about. The transformation that Jesus was after in the New Testament, when you really get down to it, that's what he was talking about. And that's what's happened in Bob's life. That's what's happened in Jeff's life and Lisa's life and my life and so many others. It's like once it happens to you, you can't describe it. You can't tell anybody about it. But when it happens to you, you just know it. And then you want to try to describe it. So the best we can do is to live it. And that's what the effect is about. It's living the effect of God's love in our lives. And it looks like Bob, you know, that he's just kind of crawling out of his skin. He's so excited to try to express it. That's what we're talking about. Now, for those of you who haven't been to the effect, this is our third week. I want to tell you that if there's some of you in here who are not Christians, if there are some of you in here who don't come from maybe any faith tradition at all or a different one, it doesn't matter. The effect that we're talking about, the transformation that we're talking about, occurs underneath the level of theology. We here, and me particularly, are post-theology in the sense that the theological understandings, the creeds, and whatever you can put on paper is not the effect. It's not the kingdom. It's not the transformation. It's not what Jesus was talking about. If you want to get right down to it, Jesus did not give us a theology. He gave us a way of life. His first followers called themselves followers of the way. What way? The way that Jesus was exhibiting for them. The way that would bring them into a unity with the Father, his Father, our Father. And so this way, what we're talking about, cuts underneath all of that. And so by virtue of our humanness, we are connected. And that doesn't matter. So I hope you will feel comfortable, and I hope that we can dialogue and talk at a level that makes sense. And everything that we do in here, everything that I want to do in here, is connecting at the human level. If our faith and our theology doesn't change our life, doesn't inform our choices, doesn't make any difference in our smile, any difference in the relationships, then what good is it? Throw it out. Because if it's not doing something real in your life, there's something wrong. And that's what Jesus was trying to tell us. And that's what we're trying to do here. You know, what we can do on a Sunday morning, it's interesting. Before, as we were ramping up to our first Sunday 3 weeks ago, have you ever had one of those conversations that you pre-think in your mind? And it's like, okay, I'm going to say this, and if they say this, then I'll say this. And it's like a ping-pong match, and you're trying to plan it all out, and you're laying at 2 in the morning and trying to figure this whole thing out. Does the conversation ever go the way that you planned it? Ever. You know, there's just too many unknowns. There's too many things that the other person can come at. And so why do we bother? Well, when you're doing a group thing, we have to do some planning. But I realized that all my assumptions were false when putting this thing together. And we realized what we need to do in here is spend more time just connecting. And that's why we wanted to have the break today and have some time where we could just connect with each other. Because the community, the unity that comes out of what we believe about the nature of God's love and the nature of Jesus' message is going to inform all those choices as well. And so we're going to try to do things differently. From time immemorial, there's only so many things that you can do when a group of people gather together. You know, and it, since we've been in caves to right now in this beautiful room, the dynamics are kind of the same. We can eat together. We can talk together. We can sit at a table. We can laugh. We can tell each other stories. And that's what Bob essentially did, was tell us part of his story. Stories are the lifeblood of the human race. Stories that we tell ourselves. Stories that we tell each other. From a wife or a husband telling each other about their day to, you know, the great poems of Virgil or Homer or Shakespeare. These are stories that we tell each other that describe something about what it feels like not only to be a human being, but to be this human being. You know, our stories are what connect. And so what we want to do is tell stories in here. And we want to all realize that we are all equal. That's why we're in a circle. We're all at table, like Arthur's Round Table. We're all equal. We're all here. You know, Bob did a really nice announcement for me and an introduction as pastor or whatever, but okay, I'm an ordained pastor, and I guess that's important for you to know so that you know that some responsible body somewhere thought it would be a good idea to, you know, make me one. I guess that's important. And, you know, I have a master's in divinity, and I guess that's important to know at some level so that at least you know that I've done some homework here. But it doesn't mean anything. I'm just as broken as anybody else. I've gone through the things that everybody has gone through. And I've got to a point where I crossed a line at some point where more often than not, I was content more often than not. Before I crossed that line, more often than not, I was discontent. And then I crossed a line. You know, that's all I look for in people. There's no perfection in human beings in terms of having everything just right. I don't look for that. I don't expect that. But there's a line that we do cross where we can say that we are characterized by contentment rather than being characterized by fear. When we can cross that line, everything changes. The way we look at life, the way we look at each other, the way we look at relationship, it all changes. You know, suddenly the world just brightens up. It's something that sounds like a greeting card. I grant you that. But when you're experiencing it, it becomes so real. And that's what we're trying to do. So the question is, how? How do you do this? I thought what I'd do, and let's see, I wanted to tell you a little bit of my story, because it's kind of instructive to see that, you know, how do you go through this? Well, for me, I was raised Catholic in the Catholic Church, 12 years of Catholic school, and at the end of Catholic school, I joined a monastery, a Catholic monastery. But within a year, I realized I made a huge mistake, and I left again. It's a very different life within the monastery, but it was something I thought I wanted to pursue. When I left the monastery, I left the Catholic Church as well. I didn't mean to. It just kind of worked out that way. It no longer seemed important or relevant in my life. I was throwing myself into music, and all through my 20s, I was going after music. I was going after finishing up school. And there was a hurt in me. There was a pain in my life that I wasn't ready to acknowledge. And I was papering it over with all this activity and all this stuff. And every choice that I made, every decision, every turn that I took was colored by the fear and the pain that I was feeling, and I didn't even know it. I knew that my life was not going well. I knew that, you know, there was this trail of broken relationships behind me, but I didn't really understand what was going on. And then when I was 29, I got married, and that turned out to be not a good decision either. And I got married at 29, we had a baby, and we got divorced, all within just a very few years, a very short amount of time. And when that divorce occurred, that was something that I thought I would never, ever do. I never thought I'd be in that position. You know, doing the Wednesdays and the weekend, you know, custody and all that. And it threw me into a tailspin that I wasn't sure I was going to recover from. I knew that I could not continue to live the way that I was living. I didn't want to continue living the way that I was living. Something had to change. I figured, okay, I've done Christianity, been there, done that. And I threw myself into any type of spiritual or quasi-spiritual activity I could, just trying to find out what in the world is this life all about. I attended the Church of Religious Science. I spent a year in the Mormon Church, you know, because I was so intrigued by the sense of community that the Mormons display. It's amazing. These people are so beautiful. Ultimately, I couldn't get past the theology, though, so I was back out again. I tried different churches. I got into reading about Eastern mysticism and theology and philosophy. I even attended, oh, this is great, what did they call it? They call it a spiritual development workshop. But basically what it was channeling and tarot cards and palm reading and remote viewing and all this wild stuff. And, you know, that's intriguing, too. That's interesting. But as soon as I realized that it really wasn't the crux of what I was looking for, I lost all interest and I moved on. And then at one point, someone in my department invited me to her church. And this was a non-denominational, conservative, evangelical brand Christian church. I figured, okay, well, I've never done that. Let's try that too. What the heck? And I spent the next 8 years at that church, and with a few years off at a different church. And there was something about feeling like I had come back home, but it was completely different at the same time. I had been out in the hinterland so long that I just desperately wanted to belong to something. And this gave me that opportunity to kind of come in from the cold. And at the same time, though, I threw myself right back into the same patterns. I ended up on the worship team, and I ended up in leadership, and I was doing all this activity and stuff. And I was still just papering over the pain. Nothing had really changed. I changed sides, but I didn't change. There's a big debate about what, you know, conversion really is, what salvation really is. Is it an event, or is it a process? Well, for me, in my experience, it's always been a process. There's never been one moment that I can say everything changed. I remember the day at church. I went to church, and I brought my daughter. My daughter was about 4 years old at the time. You know, this is only just a few years ago, but this is when you dressed her up like Easter. You know, she had the little frilly dress on and the white leggings and the black shiny shoes. It's so weird because we've gotten so casual in just about 10 or 12 years just from then. But that's what we did. I actually had to learn how to braid hair, if you can imagine that. So, you know, trying to do hair on a four-year-old. But she was sitting on my lap, and I remember her looking up to me and saying, "Daddy, why are you crying?" There was something in me that kind of broke, I guess, at that moment. And the pastor called out and did an altar call and said, if anyone, you know, and I raised my hand. He said, well, see me after the service. And I did. We went into this back room, and he led me through the sinner's prayer. And then he just got up and started to leave the room. And I said, wait a minute. Well, what just happened here? I don't feel a thing. So he kind of dutifully came back and sat next to me again. And he said, well, you know, fact is, you've taken Jesus into your heart. Feelings will come later. And he got up and split. You know, it was just like that. And the reality was, I didn't feel any different. And the reality was that nothing changed in my life. You know, I was still making those same kind of decisions, and I was still just papering everything over with work. And it wasn't too long after that that Marion and I met again, and that was the start of the good decisions that I made in my life when I married her and I asked her to marry me. It took her a week to say yes, by the way. And she didn't sign on to be a pastor's wife, and I don't think she knew what it meant to be married to a musician either, but she stuck with me, so I thank her for that. But that was the beginning of some better decisions. And I remember a night about 7 years ago, sitting on our porch in Dana Point. We were living right up here at the top of the hill at Blue Lantern. And I suddenly realized what God's love must mean. I was sitting there kind of trying to justify in my mind, well, you know, I'm really not that bad a guy. I do this and this and this. You know, that kind of mental exercise we go through. And it kind of broke through to me that God's love has nothing to do with anything that I do. My behavior has nothing to do with God's love. There's nothing I can do to make him love me any more or any less. God can't love me any more or any less. God is love. He doesn't do love. It can't be turned off or turned down. All these things just started flooding through. And it was just like that moment where you slap yourself on the forehead and say, oh. Now, it didn't change me overnight, but it's been changing me ever since. As I have learned to lean into that place when I start to go crazy again, when I start to fear again, when I start to worry about all the things that I haven't done, and I remember it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter to a God who loves me anyway and no matter what. I think one of the hardest things for us to do as humans is to get past that threshold where we think that love is conditional, that it's finite, you know, that it's exclusive. It applies to some and not to others. That it has degrees. God's love has none of those things. And when we start to get that, things start to change. We can relax. We can start to just enjoy the ride and not worrying about every step that we take. as if it has some sort of eternal consequences, as if it has something to do with our ultimate acceptance. Hey, we are accepted already. And that's what I finally started to get. You know, all of these things, it was just a process. There was no creed. There was no formula. There was no nothing that suddenly made the difference. It was a process of starting to understand what this whole relationship is about. And so that's what we want to try to get across to each other and what we want to try to do here. What we do on a Sunday morning has really nothing to do with the overall process or the journey of your lives. It can be a help. It can be a wonderful enjoyment to get together and share. But ultimately, each one of us is going to have to engage on our own journey if we're going to get to that smile point, if we're going to get to the place where we start to look like Bob over here, where we're jumping out of our skin, you know, and we're just so excited that we can hardly get the words out fast enough. That is a process, and that's what we all have to engage. There was a Catholic priest who ran the retreat center up at Malibu, a Franciscan that I got to know pretty well during one of the really low points in my life. He was like a touchstone for me. And but he was very liberal theologically, and he was always getting letters sent into the chancery office. He got in a lot of trouble for the things that he said. Yeah, Grindel likes that. And he said one thing that seemed particularly outrageous to me, because I was still in my pre-theology or whatever that mode would be. And I went into his office afterwards, and I started to debate him about the issue. How can you believe it? He just held up his hand in my face, you know, that universal stop sign there, and said, all I can tell you is what I've become convinced of. You go become convinced of what you're convinced of. Now stop and process that for a second, because at the time I thought that was a cop-out. I thought that was a way of avoiding. And now I realize it is the only possible answer that anyone can give to you ever. This is what I'm convinced of. You go become convinced of what you're convinced of. You know, I sitting here talking to you, I can't convince you of anything. I can give you information, but that's not really all that important in the long run. Unless you're ready to process it at that moment. I'm not here to try to get you to understand or to believe anything or to convince you of anything. The only thing that I want to do is to encourage you to engage on the journey. To move out yourself, to fully extend. And whatever that means. I mean, what does that mean when I say engage the journey? What is it? How do you even do that? Well, that's what I wanted to talk a little bit about this morning. How do you start to engage the journey? Well, I believe that you start where it hurts. Whatever those things that you wrote down here on these papers, on these cards today, whatever is the most hurtful thing in your life, that is the point at which your disunity is greatest. Your disillusionment, your disappointment, all the dis words, all the D words. Where it hurts the most is the most dysfunctional place in your life. That's why it hurts. You have to start there. Why? Because the point of your life that is most disunified, dysfunctional, forms the limit of what you can do in relationship at all. I've often said that our relationship with God is only as good as our worst relationship with someone else. Hear that? Because our worst relationship with somebody else forms the limit, the parameters within which we can relate at all. We can't relate any better than that one. And let's be clear. If someone tells you they never want to speak to you again, but you have your arms open wide for any time that they might want to come back, that's not your worst relationship. That's their worst relationship. Okay? We can't control what anybody else does. All we can control is our attitude toward everyone else. If our arms are open wide to everyone, then we are open wide to a relationship with God that makes sense, that will start to define who we are. But that worst relationship, that place of pain, and we've all got one, is going to limit our ability to move beyond, through, past, around that blockage. We have to start there. And see, that's what I did not do in my 20s and early 30s. Instead of leaning into the pain, I tried to just make it go away. And don't we always do that? We avoid pain and we seek pleasure. That's what we do. We're humans. And we think, then, that pain is an evil. Pain is something bad. And the negative emotions that go with it, fear, envy, anger, jealousy, depression, all of those negative emotions are also bad and should be avoided. But they fulfill a very important function in our lives. We need those. You put your hand on a hot stove, the pain tells you to take it off. The negative emotions, the pain that we feel, are motivators in our life. They motivate us to move, to go someplace else that is healthier for us to go to. All right? If we didn't have that, think about someone who's content. If you're content, if you're happy, you just stay where you are. You never move. I see all eyes going to the banner here. So a content person is content to stay exactly where they are. As soon as you feel that first prick of pain, then you're motivated to move. That is the function of those negative emotions. That's the function of pain. But we need to use it as such. If we paper it over, then it doesn't do its job. That dysfunction stays buried for years, decades sometimes, getting more and more toxic and continuing to fuel the pathologies in your life. On the other hand, if you lean into the pain so much and just stay there, then it becomes just a habit to be in pain, to have that as part of your definition. What we want to do is to use the pain to realize this is an area that needs to be worked on. And this is where the effect relies on the steps of AA, the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because in a sense, what you did right here was a little mini fourth step. You know, the fourth step of AA is to make a fearless inventory of your life and to see what's going on. And then the next steps after that are dealing with those shortcomings, those things in your life that you want to change. So the point at which we can begin the journey is to identify where it hurts and why in our lives. To be fearless about uncovering some of this stuff so that we can find out what it is that's the dynamic that's working. To start working to remove that, because when that gets removed, then other things happen. The book of James tells us, you know, what does it profit if you tell someone to be warm and filled and yet you don't do anything to help them be warm and filled? It's just empty words. We got to deal with our physical lives before we can really deal with our spiritual lives in terms of this journey we're taking. Yes, we can claim allegiance to God, and yes, we can join a church, but this transformation is a process that needs to get behind and or needs to get past the physical and psychological things that are blocking. So you start where it hurts. And for me, the divorce was the point at which I realized there was so much pain, so much dysfunction, I knew I had to do something different. That was the point, hitting bottom, I suppose, that got me motivated to do something different. And this is what we all need to look at. I thought that maybe just take a look at some of these. I don't know if you did it all anonymously, but that's fine. If your name is on here, I'm not going to read it. Don't worry. And also, if someone wrote something on here and you do want to start a dialogue, you know, put your name on it. Put an email address. I mean, only so much can get taken care of right here today. But if we can start to talk to each other on an ongoing basis the other 6 days of the week, this is where things can start to happen. So if you put something on here anonymously and you want to put put your name on it, you know, just grab another card on your way out and do that. This one is fear of financial insecurity as well as the fear of rejection and pain of opening up to people in general. That's huge. I didn't pass law school, and I'm trying to get a job with my major, and I'm receiving no response in my job search. Basically, I want a fulfilling job that will be able to support me and my daughter comfortably. This is just real life stuff. How can I erase? Oh, this is, I love this one. How can I erase years of bad theology and get back to the pure basics? What does God want me to concentrate on? Why are we here on earth? What can we do as individuals and church to really make a difference? Oh, my gosh, just put this on your refrigerator. You know, this is huge. And this is what I've been dealing with myself for the last 15 years, exactly this stuff. because I realized that in my pain and my broken relationships and the divorce and all this stuff, it's like my church and my theology wasn't making any difference. How does it become relevant again? You know, for me, it becomes relevant when we get back to exactly what Jesus was saying. But we have to do that by stepping into the sandals of his first listeners, his first hearers. And we're going to do that in here from an Aramaic point of view and really understanding his message. We're going to hit all of these. Being grateful for what I have today. That's a hard one. Unity with my wife. We're talking about if there isn't unity with the closest relationships, how is there going to be unity with those that radiate out from those relationships? It's not possible. If you want to define a person, you define them in terms of the quality of their closest relationships, the ones within their own home first. How do we cross the religious aisles, divides, and create more harmony, unity instead of division, such as the current conflict in Iraq, Jews versus Islam versus Christian? Working too much, family issues, keeping up in school, being able to balance work, school, friends, family, and stupid boys. Basically keeping up with the everyday struggles of life. This one just says school. All right, enough said about that. What do you got here? Relationship, alcohol, lonely, husband wanted? No. I don't think I got that right, but I like that one better. It's funny. I can't quite read that. Husband walkout, maybe. I don't know. Letting go, love, unhealthy relationships, surrender, willingness to change, keep my eyes on the Lord. And then finally, I need prayer to help me stay sober. I want God's will for me and the girls, and I miss my family. You know, we can all walk into a place like this and be well-coiffed and look great, and underneath that veneer, there is so much going on. Can you see that? That's one thing that I have loved about working with AA. Because everybody knows why you're there. There's no pretense. You know, you're a drunk. You're an addict. That's why you're there. We walk into a place like this and we have the luxury, I suppose, of putting up some sort of front. But underneath it, scratch it a little bit. There's so much going on. That's where we got to get real. That's where we want to connect with each other, to dig into those places, even if it hurts, so that we can get through and leave it behind. You know? And join Bob next to that picture. Before we close, there's one addendum I want to make to where we start. Start where it hurts, but you need to start in a certain manner. And this is, again, the AA steps. The first step of AA is to admit your powerlessness. Now, in AA, it's admitting your powerlessness over alcohol, that your life has become unmanageable. For us here, it's no different. And what I want to tell you is Jesus had the same first step that he was trying to give each one of us. What did he say? He said, unless you become like one of these little children, you will not enter the kingdom. Now, let me just say this. We tend to think of the kingdom as being heaven, all right, as if our behavior had something to do with ultimate acceptance by God. That's not what Jesus was saying. Kingdom is the quality of life that's available right here and right now to someone who is living in God's presence. That is kingdom in Jesus' definition, and everything he said was within that context. Unless you become like a child, you will not enter the kingdom. The word that he used there in Aramaic is talia. But the interesting thing about talia is that it can mean a child, but it also means a house servant. So when you start to think about the qualities of a child and the qualities of a house servant, you realize that not only is Jesus saying, unless you have that sense of complete dependence, joy, wonderment, just enthusiasm for life, but also tempered with the voluntary submission of the house servant, of the slave. You say, well, a slave doesn't have the choice. Well, a slave has a choice to either serve or die, right? There's a choice there. It may not be a good choice, but it's still a choice. That voluntary submission is what each of us need to realize. We're not children anymore. We need to voluntarily submit to that place of complete dependence and willingness to serve. but without losing that wonderment and that joy. It's the same message. We need to admit our complete powerlessness. Now, that seems like something hard to do until you realize that we are all powerless anyway. Any power that we think we have, any control we think we have is illusion. So all you're really doing is being willing to give up the illusion that you have any power or control. That's the first step. And he amplifies that in the beginning of the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew 5, 6, and 7. The first thing he says in the Beatitudes is, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven." And that term, poor in spirit, which doesn't mean very much to us, in Aramaic, it's an idiom. Meskeni baruch, which means poor in spirit literally, but it is an attitude of humility, dependence, vulnerability. It's an attitude of poverty, even if you're rich. It's the same idea. If we can begin where it hurts with the attitude of the child and the servant, realizing that we are powerless in and of ourselves, but that there is another power that is alongside of us and always ready, willing, and able, and drawing us in, now we've got something to work on. But don't shy away from the things that hurt. Identify them. And if you need to talk to any of us, we're more than willing. That's why we're here. That's what the effect is all about. And we want to open that dialogue. Amen. All right. Well, Father, thank you so much again for just another wonderful morning, Lord. And we are so grateful. We are just amazed that you are who you are and that you include us in all that you are, that everything that you have is ours as well, that you give with that kind of abandon. And we just ask that you would help us to see that that is how you give, and to help us to have the courage and the perseverance to lean in to where it hurts and to begin to find that process of transformation. And we thank you in Jesus' name. Amen. Let's all stand, and let's make a big circle. We're going to end with the Lord's Prayer. So we have the luxury of doing some of these kind of things when we're still kind of small. This is wonderful. Jeff, could you lead us, buddy?
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. Lead us not into temptation. Deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, power, and the glory forever. Amen.
Yeah! Amen! Go live your